Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Ava, welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic, Daniel. Thanks for having me on today.
Nice. Listeners know I'm in Chicago as usual here. Whereabouts are you recording in from?
Naples, Florida.
Sweet, sweet. Kind of got the tropical look there in the backyard.
That's right. Florida is like it's like a big storm, and half an hour later the sun starts shining. There's a rainbow, and it's just we're in that season, right? So you kind of get different weathers in the day. It's very exciting here.
Sweet. So would you mind starting us off with the background and the business model as it currently stands?
Yeah, I would love to, Daniel. So I'm CEO and co-founder of CPI Capital. It's a real estate investment firm where our mandate is to really partner with limited partners, passive investors, to acquire institutional multifamily assets in the Sunbelt states. And when I say institutional, I mean 100 plus stores. Our business model is very black and white. We always look for already built, stabilized cash flowing assets that are 90% more occupied. And what we really love to do is we love to go in there and be fix and flippers on a large scale. So what we do is we always look for a value add component, nothing crazy. We go for properties that are, we like to call them class B properties. And we do a lipstick renovation. So, take out the flooring, add new floors, paint, light fixtures, kitchen appliances. My favorite thing is to add washer and dryers to units that don't have washer and dryers. And then we turn over the tenants. So the 10% that's not occupied, we renovate those. And then as we're done a unit, we go to the current tenants living there and we kind of say, hey, for a brand new unit, would you like to move in for $150 premium? And in most cases, they say yes. This is where the numbers start to get really exciting for investors, because this is what we call our wealth creation, CPI Capital's wealth creation system, is this forced appreciation aspect of how you can literally take one of these multifamily assets, do these lipstick renovations, turn over the tenants, and increase the value by millions and millions of dollars in the first 1 to 2 years of owning the asset.
Okay, cool. Good stuff. The washers and dryers, 100 units with washers and dryers does what to the water bill?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll tell you one thing it does do is we have a community washer and dryer as it is, right? So everybody has all their laundry to the community washer and dryer. When we put it in the unit, it can actually increase the rent up to $50 to $60 per unit. And to put it into perspective, say on a 200 unit, if you're doing all these renovations and you're increasing a unit by $150 a unit, you can increase the value by about $10 million in the first 2 years of owning the asset. Mm. So that's just forced appreciation. Now, we also purchase in regions that are significantly growing, job growth, population growth, income growth, rent growth. So you get that natural market appreciation as well. So we kind of get the best of both worlds, I like to tell investors when I'm kind of explaining the business model.
What is the vintage on the properties that you guys go after?
So we do class B. Sometimes we are looking at some class C, and we have done class A. But we're really hyper-focused on that class B 1980 plus, 1990, 2000s. And that's kind of where we're focused at right now. Okay, in a class B neighborhood.
And before we went on the show, we were talking about the target markets right now of excitement being Orlando, Jacksonville, and Tampa.
That's right.
Would you mind describing the reasons behind why that's the target in 2023?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. So we really follow the data. So we're very data-driven, growth metrics, as I mentioned, population growth, rent growth, income growth, job growth. We always look for where are Fortune 500 companies coming? Well, business-friendly states, right? And Florida happens to be one of those states. Where they're planting their headquarters, it's creating a lot of jobs, and where jobs are, people follow. So we know there's an interstate migration happening. I mean, a lot of millions of people are coming from New York and California, and they're all flocking to these lower costs of living, sunny Sunbelt states. So that's really why we're focused on Florida, particularly. Another hot market is Texas. I mean, there's a lot of people, millions of people flocking to Texas as well. So you have the jobs, people follow, the population growth happens. And then what happens is in this region, it's very landlord friendly, not only business friendly, but landlord friendly. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at regions where there's no rent control, as opposed to regions where you're limited to how much you can increase the rent on landlords. And we're not bad landlords. We're not those scary landlords that are looking to increase rents on people. What it is it's naturally in the whole area increasing because it's a more popular place for people to live. So naturally the market is appreciating for rent. And that's essentially how it works with our properties.
Yeah, it's one of the things in Chicago. I guess I got here in 2015. I moved from Philadelphia to be near my daughter, who was heading into high school at the time. And I think rent control was like on the table, maybe all the way up through about 2020. I think I have the dates wrong, but I was completely unaware because 97% of our business to this point has been single family. So the rent control aspect really didn't drive it much. We're like promoting home ownership, fixing houses up and selling them to people who are going to live there. Right. But now that I've invested in and been in these larger deals, the rent control topic simply being mentioned at the state's capital is enough to drive fear through the hearts of everybody. I think it compressed cap rates in New York City when they did implement it. Was it rent control? I think that was one that went in recently. It compressed the cap rates decompressed them by like one percentage point across the board in New York City, I believe.
Right. I mean, I used to be, I currently moved to Florida. I recently lived in Vancouver, Canada. And we were limited to 1.5% a year, with cap rates being super compressed as well there. So like the business model that we currently utilize, it actually didn't ever work where I was from. So that's why I started, buying in other exciting regions where you were going to get the yields, the rent to value ratios, but then not have all these restrictions, so that we can actually be part of the business model that we're part of.
So what is the CPI Capital business model? Is this a hold forever strategy, a buy, fix, and sell in 5 to 7 years? What's the hold time in this business model?
Yeah, we're like fix and flippers, but on a large scale. So we do a 3 to 5 year hold. So are obviously market opportunistic and, depending on what things look like, we could potentially refinance at some point in there, return some of the capital back to investors, but then we're not long-term hold investors. So when we say 3 to 5 years, it's not like we're going to wait until, the eighth year comes around and sell then, because investors are trusting us, they don't want their capital tied up for too long. So we do that 3 to 5 years. If it's 6 years that comes on, but we always see where the market's at and then obviously do what's in best interest for ourselves and our investors, because we do invest alongside of our investors as well.
Okay. What does it look like if I'm an investor, I'm an accredited investor, and I'm putting $100,000 to keep the math simple into a deal that's, maybe under contract right now, getting ready to close? What is the profit split to the general partner? What are the preferred returns, if any? I mean, what does it look like for me to put $100,000 into the fund?
Yeah. So on $100,000, what we do is I always like to kind of lay it out, the return summary. But we do monthly distributions at CPI Capital. We do give preferred returns of 7 to 9%. So we give investors the option to invest in different classes of shares. We give them an incentive, hey, if you invest a little bit more, your shares will go up a little bit. But we do monthly distributions. So the cash flow always starts at maybe 4-5% the first year, and then it grows to 7%, 9%, because of course, as we're renovating, the cash flow is increasing as we turn over those tenants. And then what we do is when we sell on the back end, the profit split is a 70-30 split, GP-LP. So LP-GP, I should say. So 70% goes to the limited partners, the passive investors, and then the general partners keep 30%. But that's of course, our preferred returns is what investors should get really excited about when they're investing in a syndication, because it's really meaning that they get paid first, their 7-9%, before the GPs participate in any profit. So as a passive investor, if you're listening to this, always look for syndicators who have that preferred return, because it kind of, it's performance based almost for, other than the fees, that are part of the deals, it's performance based. We have to get our investors that 7-9% first before we can participate in that 30%.
Yeah. It's good to see the 70-30 favoring the limited partners who are putting the capital in. Do you guys do any cost segregation, depreciation on the front end, take any depreciation throughout? What are the tax benefits for people, if any?
Yeah, definitely cost segregation for sure. I think that the most unknown things for passive investors is the tax benefits. The tax benefits actually flow down through to the LPs, which is really exciting. And there's usually about a 40 to 60% paper loss at the end of the day. And what we do is we write articles to kind of teach investors what the tax benefits are in these syndications so that they can learn about it. And another thing that's really exciting is investors can utilize their registered funds. They can use their registered funds to invest in syndications as well. So there's a lot of really savvy kind of ways to invest in syndications and all the benefits that are involved. It's just about kind of learning the ropes. And at CPI Capital, we put a great deal on thought leadership and trying to educate our investors of what's going on here, right? Because it's mostly busy professionals that are partnering with us. They don't really have a whole lot of time to learn a whole new business. So we try to make it really simplified for them so that they can understand on a high scale everything that's possible.
And what is that meant by registered fund? That's the first time I'm hearing that.
Oh, self-directed IRAs.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes, okay. Yes. Self-directed IRAs. And not to confuse anybody, but another thing I wanted to point out, Daniel, we did a conference and we had this big banner that was up and it said preferred returns 7 to 9%, and everybody said, oh, 7 to 9%, like that's an okay return, you know, like that's okay. And I'm like, no, that's preferred return. So I always try to educate investors, there's preferred return and then there's annualized return, which is the true metric that people understand. And that's really where we start looking. You know, we always say we want to double our investors' money within 5 years. So we're looking at those above average returns on the average.
Okay. How many exits have you guys completed so far?
So we actually started our company in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah. So August 2020, we have almost close to 1,000 doors now, and we haven't exited any deals yet. You and I were kind of discussing before the show about where we're at right now and so forth. And with all the turbulence that was happening in the market, we were sitting on the sideline alongside of many institutions and other syndicators. And we haven't bought any deals in the last year. But my team has turned the engines on now, and we really feel like we're going into a tremendous buying opportunity. So now we're ready. We're kind of ramping up to tackle the Florida market and get some.
Okay. So how are the 1,000 deals going? So some of the story that we're hearing out there is there's areas where the rent growth has slowed and even turned negative in some instances. We've heard some headwinds from construction costs being significantly more than we're budgeted in the last 3 to 5 years. And we've heard, obviously, major concerns with interest rate adjustments on adjustable rate loans. How have you dealt with those risks, endured some of them, mitigated some of them, or maybe avoided those in your 1,000-door portfolio so far?
Yeah, very great question. So our properties, I'm very proud to say this, we've not done any capital calls. We really mitigated our risk by two things. When we bought the properties, we got an interest rate cap. So like an insurance policy, if the interest rates did go really high, we were protected at a certain rate. And then secondly, having a large cash reserve. I always get the team to put a higher cash reserve than they think we need, because it's really important to have there. So those are two ways we mitigated the risk. So we haven't done any capital calls. I know there's been a lot of turbulence in the market. And to be honest with you, Daniel, some companies did not get that cap rate. And they did get in a lot of trouble with the interest rates, you know, spiking, and there was a lot of firms going on a buying spree, and then it's doom and gloom for them now. And that's really where we've been kind of sitting on the sidelines, kind of getting ready for some distressed deals where we can get not only a great discount but millions of dollars off of these properties that are in distress and sellers need to sell.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it we're going to see. I mean, we keep hearing about the distressed inventory. I guess I am seeing in the industrial and retail space, 70,000 square foot retail center, probably class B plus, 90% occupied, and I think the other one was like a 40,000 square foot industrial, very choppy old product. But both of them were priced right, and they were the first two deals that were offered priced right in the market that I've seen in the last year and a half or 2 years that I've been watching it. Everything else has just been egregious multiples of what any semblance of value might have been. And it was surprising to see those couple of assets come through, although we haven't really seen the full cycle of distressed inventory come out, right?
Yeah, some sellers are like, why would I sell right now? Because they have their fixed interest rate and they're happy campers. It's really those other, and me, my partner and I, we always kind of get in a little bit of a, like, I believe that there's going to be a lot of distressed assets. And he believes that there's all these billions of dollars of capital that has been sitting on the sideline waiting for this time, right? But we're kind of in that sweet spot where large institutions won't really go after those 150 unit doors. So we kind of joke around and go back and forth on this topic. But I really believe that in this year, starting this year, especially next year, there's going to be some great opportunities. And I think I've proven my point because we're working on a deal right now. It was $29 million to start with. It's already down to $23 million, and who knows what we're going to get it for. So
nice.
Yes.
What is the deal attraction strategy for CPI Capital?
Well, we always want to find a deal that has a value add component. And there's something called like a true value add. That's a deal that hasn't been touched by a lot of syndicators before or by a lot of institutions. So what that means is it's in its original state. We call them classical units. So the more classical units that we can have in a deal, the better, because that gives us more room to either renovate them all or leave a little bit of meat on the bones for the next person to come along. So that's really what we're looking for right now. And that's our strategy.
So would that be the builder who built this thing in 1982 and the family still owns it now, all these years later? Or is that when you say like no syndicators touched it? Because there is this, like, it seems from my outside the industry view, there's kind of this like churning of apartment units that's always going on. And it's like syndicator A bought it in 1996 and they did it some work and then sold it in 2004. And the next one came in and did the same thing to 2007. They lost it to bankruptcy in 2008, and now someone else got it and grinded it to 2014 and then one to 2017. And now that would not be the true classical unit because half the units were renovated. There's a few old classical units in the building. So there is still value add there, but certainly there's been a lot of value cycled out of it versus what you're saying is the true value add is almost original owner or somebody who has not done a whole lot other than collect checks from that asset for an extended period of time. And maybe what is that extended period of time that you've seen those kind of deals?
So there's a couple different things. What you just talked about, where it's kind of went through these syndicators and people have sat on it. Some people made money, like tremendous amount of money just sitting on assets when they went through the bullish market that they went through. I think there's something like, and I'm going to be a little bit off on this stat, but there's something like 43 million apartments, when we say multifamily, it's like four plus doors. I think there's like 43 million. And I believe almost half of that, like 23 million or 20 million are mom and pops, right? So these are families that own these properties. And the kids maybe don't want them and they got to sell at some point because they don't want to manage them anymore. So that would be ideal. So you're going to get the best of both worlds.
So you guys have bought off of each of those avatar investors, I guess, over time?
We have never bought off mom and pops yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we have bought off of a developer, a class A. We've bought off of a developer and we've bought off of other syndicators who are selling.
So some of those the churners.
Churners, exactly.
I was at a conference for multifamily here in Chicago. Chicago is a great city for multifamily. I was just saying this on our last episode because even a 2, 3 unit, 4 unit that are residential, it's such a vibrant market because we have a record-breaking number of those buildings throughout the entire city. So it offers a really great opportunity for your house hacking investor who's getting their first place to kind of get in or accidental landlords. there's a lot of value in those small units in our city. We also have a lot of 20, 30, 40, 60 unit buildings, things that size. It's really, really old product here, but we're a great city too, because of the size, the 8-9 million people that are here really helps kind of keep things vibrant. And we have really high rents. That was a digress.
I was going to ask you what the rent to value ratio is in Chicago.
I don't know what the ratios are. I haven't really figured that out. I have 39 units or something like that, that I own throughout the city, and I've worked on them and I'm continuing to work through them. And mine's more of a buy it and hold it forever kind of a strategy. It's like retirement. I don't have investors on it, and I'm just kind of letting those things sit there for a period of time, maybe until they become too much of a drag. So nice. The conference I went to here in the city, there was a comment one of the people made from the stage. He said, you know, I love Chicago because it's the kind of city where you're finding this mom and pop owner who's owned the thing since like 1960, 1970, and they've never sold it and they've never updated the units. He's like, I'm amazed and blown away. In fact, he didn't say Chicago. He said the Midwest. He said all over the Midwest. And he said, I came from California. In California, there is zero. There's nothing. There's no more mom and pop buildings anywhere at all. Everything has been traded and cycled by the syndicators over and over out there on the West Coast. And
really? Okay.
He also mentioned that a lot of that might have also been occurring throughout the Sun Belt too, but I'd be hard pressed because I don't remember the full details. So I think that may be market specific, right? It's more and more of a unicorn depending on where you're at in the country, or more prevalent in other parts of the country. So I'd be interested to follow along with you here over the next couple of years, see how often these elusive mom and pops everybody's talking about, you know, like how often do we actually see those kind of deals?
That's right. No, that's really well said. And then the competition too, right? In the Sun Belt states. I mean, everybody's wanting to invest in the Sun Belt states. So the competition's a little bit higher as well.
And it's been for, you know, forever pretty much.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's take a different turn here. Let's say we have a listener who's interested in building their own private equity company and raising money. What type of, instructions or, you know, jewels of wisdom would you share with somebody who wants to go out and do the kind of thing that you're doing now?
Right on. Well, I got lots to share, that's for sure. Cause I kind of, you know, they say the blood, sweat, and tears, right? That you go through to do something like this. I grew up in a small city. So I'm kind of like a small town girl, from Canada. And now I'm in the US, but I was in residential real estate for a decade before I actually pivoted to real estate private equity, where I met my business partner, who was a developer in Vancouver. A kind of a visionary in his own right, where we co-founded CPI Capital. And it really, you know, we kind of did it backwards, Daniel. You know, a lot of people say, find the deal and investors will come. You know how a lot of people think that, oh, I have a great deal. It's such an amazing deal. I'm going to just send it to some people. People are going to love this deal. They're going to invest with me. We did it actually totally backwards. We thought, okay, we want to dive into an institutional multifamily asset on our first deal. We're not going to start out with a fourplex and then a 10-plex and work our way up. We want to go big first. So in order to do that, what we had to do was we decided to build our investor community first, to build the know, like, and trust, what I like to call it, first, with a ton of investors, and then take down an asset. And we did this for a good year, probably, before we actually did our first deal. We educated people on this concept of passive investing and preferred returns and annualized returns and all of these, you know, kind of terminology that people aren't quite used to. I was getting on calls with doctors, and they're thinking, like, they were asking me, like, can I really passively invest in something like this? Like, you know, I don't have to be a landlord. I don't have to deal with the headaches of being a landlord. And I said, yes, my team executes the day-to-day operations and the business model. And you get to sit back and you get to receive your monthly distribution. But more than that, there's a lot of communication that you'll receive from our end. You know, on a monthly basis, you're going to get your monthly news email where we go through occupancy, renovations, and all that fun stuff. And we educated about this concept, and we started speaking all over Canada and all over the US, and we started filling investors. They started coming down our funnel, we like to call it. And then we started nurturing these investors again for a good year. And we started asking people, hey, if we came to the table with a large deal like this, now that you understand, you know, the higher concept of how everything works. Would you invest with us? We were getting a lot of yeses after we spent a year building that trust. Because you got to build the trust first. Nobody's going to invest with you. They first need to know you. That's where you go market yourself and you get in front of everybody by podcasts like this, or by speaking on stage, or by news publications, or by LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I mean, there's all different platforms nowadays. So they need to know you. Then of course they need to like you. So hopefully they like what you're saying. And then eventually you provide them with so much content, that they start to trust you. And that's really how we started. Our real estate private equity firm. We did it totally opposite from what everybody else talks about.
Yeah, it seems odd. It's like, what were you talking about before you had a deal? It was like just the how to, here's how it works content pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much that. And then people are thinking like, okay, you're going to take down a large institutional deal for your first deal. Well, that sounds a little bit scary, doesn't it? What we did was we partnered with a group who already closed on $100 million worth of deals. So we really had the systems, the structure, the boots on the ground before we actually did our first deal. So it's not like we just, you know, we're going to take down a, you know, multi-million dollar asset that's $90 million. We didn't do it that way. We partnered with a group. And then slowly we knew that we wanted to be an operational real estate private equity firm. We didn't want to always partner with others. So then eventually we formed ourselves, and then we built our own systems and so forth. So that's how we built our company. And it was really great doing it that way, because you can't do it alone, right? Not these large assets. There's a lot of moving parts.
What do you think the hardest thing for somebody who's never asked someone else to invest in a deal, $100,000, whatever, more maybe, what's the hardest thing for that person to overcome?
It's you know, people just don't want to ask because they're so scared of being rejected, I think, right? You gotta change your mindset, and you gotta understand that you're providing this person with a lot of value. You're providing them with a great private alternative investment that's private. Without you, they wouldn't have known about it anyways. So that's the biggest thing that people have to overcome. Like, I have a amazing friend who has a big doctor network, but he's so scared to ask, to talk about to other doctors about these incredible investments. And I tell him, I'm trying to help him with his mindset. You know, they're going to love you, if anything. It's their decision at the end of the day. You know, you're not twisting their arm or anything. It's their decision to educate themselves on a high level and take the next step to create this alternative income stream for themselves.
And as I think back to when I first raised money, one of my mentors said, here's what you do. You get a pen and a pad, and you write down the name of, 10, 25 people who you think have money, okay, who you could get on the phone, or you could go have coffee with, and you could ask them for money. And then he said, make sure you have a deal lined up, and go present the deal, pitch it, ask for the money. And then he took it another step further. He's like, make sure you line up to get the money into your account as soon as possible, because some people, yeah, I'll invest. And then when the time comes to invest 90 days later, oh, well, I put it into this other thing. I no longer have the money, that kind of thing. If I evaluate my own fears around that and why I never liked taking money from investors initially early on, I had lost money through 2007, 8, 9, 10, right? I kind of like tried and failed at real estate before coming back again in 2011, give my life back to God, 2012, quit drinking and really clean myself up, and then started to do deals. We did deals and lost money since 2012. We've had a couple losers, but we've made money on, you know, the great majority of the deals that way more than made up for those losses. But I think it was my fear that I would lose the investors' money. Right. That really, I don't like it. I didn't feel comfortable with it. And now I've had such a large track record of successfully doing the deals, I really truly understand the value that I'm bringing to the table for my investors. So we pay 2 points and 10% interest. It's like a simple interest kind of a loan paid on a balloon. So we'll have the money for 6 months, 9 months, a year, sometimes as little as a month or two or 3 months, like really short in and out kind of deals. Yeah. I can use my own cash and not have to pay the 2 points and 10% interest. So now for me, I genuinely feel like I'm including the people who have money who invest in the deal with me. You know, I have friends and family who have this other income stream that I'm like allowing them to participate on our deals, even though we don't actually need their money to do it. Now, we do so many deals that we would exhaust the cash that we have. So it's a great symbiotic relationship. But it did take me a long time mentally and to see my career shift, change, and improve over time before I was like confident enough to outweigh that fear of losing the investor money. And for me, providing that opportunity to give them the income stream on our deals that we're going to close and make a profit with anyway, whether they participate or not. And now they have a chance to kind of participate at the passive level. So that was a, I don't know, a long thought string, I guess, to tack on there.
I really like what you said there, though. At the very beginning, your biggest fear was losing other people's money, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was actually just talking to somebody else on a podcast about was real estate is obviously one of the safest asset classes because it's backed by a tangible asset. And yes, we've all been through turbulent times where it's been very scary out there. But one thing I was talking about is when you go to present a deal to an investor, a lot of people do this. They just present the good. They don't present the bad, like the things that can go wrong. So what I do with my investors, and this creates more trust as well, is saying, hey, listen, this is all the great, but these are the things that can go wrong. And then that way they know, you know, they feel more confident in you too, because you're sharing the whole spectrum. You're creating that kind of, you're being very transparent. But then they're still making the decision at the end of the day as well.
Yeah, you're right about that. So I had a thought on the Florida issue. Do you guys own property in Florida right now?
We actually own property in Orlando.
Okay.
That property's doing really well.
Florida at the rents, you know, I like to go down there, you know, in the wintertime myself. It's interesting. There's a market on the Jersey Shore, Avalon and Stone Harbor. It's called Seven Mile Island. And they built it up maybe in the 50s and the 60s, and they were selling lots off. And if you bought an oceanfront lot, you got a bayfront lot for free. So they were literally giving away these bayfront lots for free. Those bayfront lots today go for about $4 to $6 million, depending on the size. And the oceanfront, I'm sure, is about the same amount. But I see what has happened in the last 25 years in Avalon. Maybe in the early 90s, you could buy properties there for $200,000 to $250,000. I think the teardowns sell for like $2 million, and the new construction goes from 3.4 to maybe 5 million plus, depending on the size. So it's a really small, compact vacation market. New York, Philadelphia goes vacations there, and it's a second home market. And I see the same thing occurring on a lot of like islands and coastal areas in Florida. And we watched Florida boom and bust, and it's boom and bust for all these years. And I'm hoping that because I own property in Florida, I'm hoping that it's kind of going to do like Avalon, where we're going to continue to see people buying houses for $1 million or $2 million, tearing them down and building something in its place with probably an appraised value somewhere, a construction value with the land, probably in the $4 to $5 million range. Some of the ones I know on Siesta Key. So it's like, is Florida's market becoming, and I guess it always has been, you know, a playground for people all around the world, Miami and Boca for people who have the money. But man, is it like reaching a whole nother level here? And you know, that doesn't even count for the entire workforce and the population and job growth there. It just, it seems like such a strong market. And then I got my insurance bill.
Yes. I wanted to talk to you about the insurance bill.
That's right. Right. So how did that go in Orlando?
Right. Yeah. So savvy investors, we got to find our way around some things, right? So we, for example, I told you Jacksonville, Orlando, and Tampa is what we're looking for right now. And insurance, honestly, on a unit can go, it went from $600, I think, all the way up to $2,200. Like we're talking, it went up big.
Triple.
Exactly. Now the way around this, and investors ask me this all the time, oh, you're investing in Florida. What about the insurance? What about this? What about that? One way around it is partnering with a property management company that has an umbrella insurance policy where they have so many units in the area that they actually get this discounted rate. So that's one way around it. Another savvy thing that we're doing, is actually even the seller that's selling the property, you could even ask them if you could if they could stay on as a GP and you can continue to keep their insurance policy. So there's certain ways around getting across, because I mean, if you're going from $600 a unit up, you have to underwrite $2,200 a unit per year for 176 units or a 200 unit property. It's really going to affect your NOI. So there's savvy ways around this. So that's essentially what we did is we partner with these larger property management companies. So there's companies that are vertically integrated where they have their own property management. So they do all the, you know, construction and renovations and everything by themselves. Or you partner with a third party property management company. And this is what I fell in love with from day one.
All right, cool.
Yeah. So the blanket, the umbrella policies that property managers have when it comes to insurance policies, mentioning, you know, insurance going from tripling $600 to $2,200 a unit and how much it can affect the NOI and really, you know, make the returns go down on a deal, which we're not in favor of. So there's ways around it. And one of the savvy ways I was mentioning was to really partner with a property manager who owns and who manages tons of units in the region. So they get this kind of discounted policy.
So do you have to put them on as a general partner in that deal in order to actually tuck them into the insurance policy?
I'd have to ask my team exactly how that works. That's a good question.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I had some friends who were also putting together, I don't know, a million square feet of industrial trying to get that same bulk policy. Maybe I'll have to follow up with you and see which company they actually might have that running through. But
definitely. Or another way is if you're buying from a seller who has a killer insurance rate, then yes, you'd have to put them as part of the GP. So this is another savvy thing that we're working on a couple of deals to continue on having that, you know, let's say $600 a month insurance instead of it skyrocketing.
Yeah, hopefully they sort that out and there's no more big losses for a few years and all of us who own property in Florida will feel better again about the insurance.
Let me ask you, Daniel, are you working on single family units here in Florida? Are you buying?
I just own a single vacation home there. So we you know, Airbnb it out, that kind of thing. So that's the one that... I don't know. We thought it was going to be $8,000 or $9,000 insurance. It was like 18, which I knew it was going to be high, and it is what it is. But it definitely puts the brakes on me wanting to get four or five more. And the stuff that we are looking at in Florida, we are looking at a 25-acre parcel industrial, and we would develop that from the ground up in the Orlando market right now. We haven't even gotten to the point of penciling the insurance, but we're pretty sure that's going to be egregious.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, try to find some savvy ways around it for sure. Because Florida is an amazing market to invest in. With your Airbnb, I'm sure you understand that with what people are willing to pay, especially all the Canadians, they come and call them snowbirds.
Oh, yeah.
All the Canadians from flock to Florida, they absolutely love it. It's beautiful, you know, 25-degree weather. It's just a paradise. except for when the hurricanes hit.
Which is why being a snowbird is not such a bad thing.
That's right. That's right.
But you'll be there this year, right, Ava?
Yeah, I'll be here. You know, I haven't gone through a hurricane yet. As I mentioned, I just moved to Florida June 1st this year. So, nice. Again, the weather coming in and out is such a beautiful emotional experience because you wake up, it's beautiful sunshine and the clouds come in and they come in fast and it pours. And then it opens up again. There's a rainbow to your left and... you know,
clear blue skies from then. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. It's something I've never seen before.
Yeah. Amazing. So a couple questions as we wrap up here, Ava, if you could go back to the beginning of your real estate career, you were just getting your real estate license. What would be the crown jewel of wisdom you would go back and share with yourself at that moment?
To get a coach or a mentor.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like the biggest piece of advice I can give anybody for whatever business they're starting out in is to just invest in a coach. You know, you think, oh my God, 10 grand is so much money. I could use that for something else. The amount of headache that they're going to save for you You know, you have to build all these systems from the ground up and literally try to figure the road out by yourself and the right direction. And, you know, what do I do here? If you get a coach, they will solve so many things for you that will probably save you tenfolds, than that investment. So that's the biggest advice I can give.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, I still to this day will have this like, aversion, let's say, to like the coach or the mentor or whatever the case is. But my dad pulled the trigger for us in 2006, and it was a total of maybe $15,000 to go to like a handful of seminars that were put on by Russ Whitney. And he had like this nationwide company at one point with a market cap rate of like $400 million. It was a publicly traded company. And a lot of people, I think, would go to those seminars, Ava, and they would leave and probably not take action or take a little action, not get the results. So they would get this bad reputation. Oh, they're con artists and they're just putting these shows in, and it doesn't work and it's a terrible business model. I came out of those seminars, 26-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And then when I showed up at the local real estate investor organizations, like the terminology and the things that I was talking about were stuff that, you know, these people at the course were doing for 30, 40 years. So I had this like older than my years kind of perception, right? And I think that opened the door to the gentleman I'm thinking of is actually one of the guys who's executive in my company now. And he funded my first flip, and we've done dozens and dozens of flips together, and now hundreds and hundreds of deals together. Great friend and business partner to this day. And I don't know if he would have had the same, I don't know, welcoming attitude, or it took me quite as serious if I didn't at least have some of that lingo down. So I got a lot more than the lingo out of that scenario, but being able to invest probably for people who are staring down the barrel of paying for a coach, and not all coaches who are paying a high price are necessarily worth it, and that's not what I'm advocating for, but being willing to make that size of investment in your own knowledge, I think, you know, it certainly has been a springboard for my career. Great, great jewel.
I love that. And the contacts, like you just mentioned, you met the right person because of it all kind of aligned. So it's just such an important step to take. Thanks for sharing that.
That's right. Ava, where can people get more contact information about you or CPI Capital?
They can just check us out on www.cpicapital.ca. You can sign up. There's a little pop-up that will pop up and sign up. You'll start receiving our weekly blogs that we send out to our database. They're all educational. So less than a 5-minute read, they get sent out every single Sunday at 3 a.m. EST. So you can plan ahead of time. You know, I'm going to have my Sunday coffee and read this beautiful blog that I'm going to learn a lot from. And it goes for passive investors and for active investors. So yes, make sure you check us out online or LinkedIn. Ava Benesaki, I'm super active on LinkedIn as well.
Cool. My final question, what is the kindest thing anyone has ever done for you?
Oh man, the kindest thing anyone has ever done for me. This is going to sound a little bit cheesy, probably, but my business partner just believing in me. That was probably the kindest thing anybody's ever done for me. I won't get too much in the weeds there, but that's probably what it was.
Nice. Beautiful. Great place to start. Great place to wrap up there. Ava, I have tons of notes here. I had a great conversation. I appreciate you blocking out the time and coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Daniel. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you.
The REI Diamond Show is sponsored by Diamond Equity Investments, a private equity firm focused on buying and selling residential and commercial property throughout the United States. If you are an accredited investor seeking double-digit returns, you can sign up to review Diamond Equity's passive investment opportunities at www.fundrehabdeals.com. And if you're an investor who is seeking deals that you can buy, fix, and flip, please go to www.dealswithroi.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.